Hello everyone, how are you doing? If you're new here, I'm Dr. Sheen, an Oxford and Cambridge graduate, a tech entrepreneur and business coach. And welcome back to Dream Girl. I'm Sheen, your host, and today we're joined by Tracy Harmoush, who is an investment banker turned into digital entrepreneur in the fitness and wellness space.
That's it.
I won't go into more details because I'll let you talk about it. How are you, Tracy?
I'm very good. Thank you so much for having me on your show.
No, very excited. So tell us the journey from investment banker to today.
The journey was basically a 10-year career in finance. I entered the finance world by luck. I got a headhunter, a friend of mine who recommended a very good role at one of the biggest investment banks in the world, actually Citigroup.
Right.
And more so than anything, I couldn't say no. You get a great opportunity, you don't want to say no, right? I'm like, let me try my luck. I'm wearing shoes that don't fit, but I'm just going to try my luck.
Yeah.
And lo and behold, I mean, 4 or 5 interviews later, I got the job. I stayed in it for a good 10 years, and I've had a lot of ups and downs in that role. I would say the majority of it, I was proud. I had a lot to prove. I had a lot to prove to myself and to other people. I was showing off with my position, with my business card. You know, there's a lot of those reasons that bode well for me in my 20s.
Yeah.
But then, you know, you're 28 and then you're 29. You're just like, I don't care.
It doesn't matter anymore. It does,
those things don't matter. So they're not. It's not really ticking the right boxes for me anymore. What I wanted to do more of was tap into my creativity, thinking outside the box, not sort of wearing shoes that don't fit, because I really felt like this is not, I'm not going to be sitting in the CEO's chair. Let's be honest. That's not my goal. I never looked that far or dreamed that big. So until I waited till my role was unbearable. I had like a head-to-head
confrontation
with one of my colleagues. Well, more so he was like my supervisor. Mm-hmm. From here and there, I'm like, look, this is not working out. If you don't do it my way, I'm going to walk out. He's like, if you walk out, I don't care. Okay, I'm walking out. And then I'm like,
oops,
what did I just
do? Happened?
This is how I'm leaving the industry. Yeah. But I never thought I would leave like that, of course. I always dreamed of leaving. But when I made the call, it was obviously irrational. I would never suggest it to anybody. I would always suggest planning and preparing and leaving instead of being irrational and waiting till you're getting so emotional and then leaving that way. But I had made the decision, though, that when I started getting headhunters reaching out to me shortly after, when they found out that I walked away, that I'm not going to look at another job offer. Because if I do, I'm going to get myself back into the cycle of not being able to refuse the money, not being able to refuse the promotion, and I'm going to get stuck once again for another 2 to 3 years, which is evidently what happened, which is why I lasted so long. So I didn't, but I never told anybody about that. I never told my parents that anybody was showing me resumes.
Yeah, no.
They would have been like, what the hell are you doing?
Take it,
right? So the only thing I would say I did that led me into this space was having the curiosity to try a workout that I never did before. I used to watch and follow a few people on Instagram doing handstands and flips and calisthenics, which was a new world for me. I used to train like your average Joe, I mean, 4 or 5 times a week, right on my lunch break very quickly. Sometimes I'd go through gaps of 3 months without training, then I'd get back into training, you know, like anybody else. So when I had the time, I shifted gear to calisthenics. I'm like, you know what? I'm out of a job. Let me just go into this.
Well.
I might as well. I'd spend 2, 3, 4 hours practicing how to handstand, practicing how to flip. And I started enjoying the thrill of sticking with something, being disciplined towards something, and then nailing it.
It's a challenge, right?
Yeah. So it just so happened to be in the form of sports for me. It could have been anything else. It could have been in pottery. It could have been anything. But I picked this hobby and I stuck with it. So I started documenting that journey on my social media platforms, and I grew my social media platforms. The brand started working with me. So I started doing a lot of digital collaborations and partnerships simultaneously to growing in the fitness industry, which led me to teaching workshops, physical workshops. In COVID, I kind of transitioned into digital. So I had an app. I created an app, a fitness app, which is basically for all levels with a nutrition guide, and it's still up and running. And my most recent venture has been all along the way, of course, I've been doing brand collaborations, of course. More so on a partnership level now. So to switch it up, not just like, okay, a post for this ad. Yeah. I like to partner on activations and on talks and stuff like that. So this is where I'm at now. I'm doing a lot of talks. I've changed direction even on my social media to push discipline more than push fitness per se.
Right.
Because that's where I find my strength. Mm. I mean, even when I'm starting new business ventures, there's a discipline that comes with it, you know, a growth mindset, like not boxing yourself anymore. And that's how I live. And I constantly try to improve where I'm weak. You mm-hmm. know, I work on my weaknesses. I work on my my shortcomings. And it's basically to have a growth mindset. And I love pushing that. So I push it through talk shows, getting guests on board to help, you know, shift and shape mindsets. Yeah. So okay. That's it.
There's so much to unpack here, Tracy. Yeah, I love
that's a journey.
I love how gracefully you said, oh, I was an investment banker. Then I went into fitness. Then I went into an app. Now I'm doing brand partnership. I mean, it's very impressive. Honestly, love the journey. And the one thing I relate to the most is your corporate journey, where you were there and you realized that this was not a good fit for you and you decided to find something else. And I think I had the same thing. I was in consulting, but I was lucky enough that I think I'm just more impatient and I just didn't want to stick to it. But it's the same as you. When I wanted to leave, they would be like, but you'll be promoted in 3 months. If you stay, there'll be more money. And it's so easy to get trapped into that. And I mean, you said you kept dreaming about leaving, but you didn't leave for such a long time.
Every summer I'd run into friends of mine who are the creatives, you know, when I'm traveling. And they're like, did you leave yet? Like, it doesn't suit you. What are you doing, Tracy? I'm like, yeah, maybe next year.
Next year.
You know, and evidently I ended up leaving. But when you watch creativity around you, or not just creativity, it doesn't have to be a creative job, but when you see somebody else really excited about what they're doing, it makes you feel like I'm not doing the right thing, right? Because why am I not that excited? Why am I counting the days until I go on holiday?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I'm the same. When I was there, I would always have a holiday booked so that I knew I could count the days to that.
100%. That's what I was looking forward to.
Right.
I would come back, book the next holiday, and know that I have something exciting to look forward to. How sad is that? Like, your day-to-day working on your project is not exciting. Mm-mm. What you're excited about is running away from it.
Yeah. And that's the thing. I think for me, what clicked was I saw this online where someone said, don't use your weekend to escape your life.
Yeah.
But build the life that you want, right? And 100%. I think because we had the same mindset of during the weekend is just an escape until I have to go back on Monday and just do this again. But what advice would you have to other people who are also kind of on the fence trying, they know they need to leave, but they're not leaving?
Look, leaving is hard. I really don't want to sound like, yeah, just leave and just go for your passion. Like, this is not the narrative I'll ever push. People have responsibilities, they have commitments, they have dependents.
Exactly.
It's not a decision you can make easily. And a lot of people, unfortunately, can never make the decision. Mm-mm. You know, it's just not for everybody. But it's also not so much about you need to be an entrepreneur versus in corporate.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely, entrepreneurship is not for everybody.
Oh, God,
I mean,
no.
It is so hard. There's a lot of responsibility that comes with being on your own, that when you're in corporate, everything's taken care of. Your paycheck is coming every month, whether you're doing a good job or not.
Yep.
You have your family taken care of in many ways. Mm-hmm. You know, you have all the benefits, insurance, all of those things, legal. You don't have to open your own company. You don't have to have all those expenses. So it is not for everybody. Some people perform better under structure. The only thing I would say is have a role that allows you to tap into your not so much creativity, but that gives you the freedom to think outside the box.
Mm-hmm.
You're allowed to, you know, be a change maker in some shape or form, you know, tap into the values of the company. What do they want to see more of? Be the first to say, you know what, maybe we should do things this way.
Mm-hmm.
And if they don't agree, then you kind of fight and push back until someone sees your viewpoint. And if you don't feel like you care enough to do that, then maybe shift industries, not so much move into entrepreneurship, but find an industry that you feel this way about, because it's such a shame to spend so many hours building a career that you don't care about. It's just a waste and it's a shame, you know? You're never going to be able to reach that potential if you don't care enough.
Oh, totally agree. And what you said about entrepreneurship, I'm going through this at the moment because I used to think that I would like the freedom of it. It doesn't matter, you know, if some things are a bit shakier. But it's that thing of your paycheck. Is it coming or is it not coming? Can I take it or do I need to pay other things with that paycheck?
So true.
These are things you never have to think about when you are in corporate.
Absolutely. And unless you already are deep into it and you built a setup where you have passive income, there's also the idea that you're trading your time for money. And if you decide to say, you know what, I'm just going to take 2 days without working. Yeah, that's 2 days of you not getting paid, darling. It doesn't bode well for you, you know? Yeah,
exactly. But then when you made the move, I'm sure that there were loads of transferable skills that you could take with you into entrepreneurship, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I come across that thought almost every other week, for example. I think that a lot of my meetings and my pitches, and I'm very confident and comfortable to go and pitch to whomever, you know, editor-in-chief of so-and-so magazine, whoever it is, because all I did was pitch to chairmen and CEOs back in finance. Mm. So I built the confidence to do that. A lot of the structure that I have in terms of work structure and working long hours, I have because I spent years being groomed in corporate to do so. I also had this conversation with my husband recently that sometimes you think what you're doing is not a right fit and you think it's a waste of time.
Mm.
And you're only going to realize that nothing comes at a waste of time because you can eventually use whatever you had done then in the future. So when I was given a job back in finance, as soon as social media started to come about, I was a market strategist and I was coming up with trade ideas. Mm. And that's how it was. You'd come up with trade ideas, you'd pitch them to your clients, mm-hmm. they trade, and that was it.
Yeah.
At some point when social media came about, they asked me, they're like, look, there's this thing called social media. We have like, I forgot what social media they were putting it on, Twitter maybe, and YouTube. So Twitter and YouTube, and we need someone to verbally explain it. Look at this finance company. They started doing it like this, so we need to do it like this. Can you do it?
Okay.
I'm like, no, I'm not going to go on like a video and talk to a video about that's ridiculous.
Mm.
Evidently, they made me do it, of course, because you don't have a choice when you're in corporate. And I did it in English.
Mm.
I had to do it in Arabic. My Arabic is terrible. And not only in Arabic, in formal Arabic and I had to memorize it because there was no teleprompter.
Like no
I had
way.
To write it out, translate it, run it by someone who speaks Arabic better than me. They forced me to take three hours a week of business Arabic lessons, one-to-one with an Arabic teacher. I constantly told myself, what the hell am I doing? Like, this is such a waste of my time. They made me come an hour early to work. I was at my desk at 7:30 a.m.
Oh my God.
So that I could put this out by 8:30, write the strategy, put it out by 8:30. In English and in Arabic.
Wow.
And before 10 a.m., I'm just like, you're so stressed out.
You've lived your whole day.
I lived my whole day before 10 a.m., absolutely. But as much as I thought that was such a waste of time, it was beneath me. What am I doing going on TV when I'm a strategist? Like, it's not for me. Now, I have to try to speak Arabic in interviews. I use that. I talk in front of the camera all the time. Mm. I become a social media personality, which evidently came from me being so comfortable to get on TV. I transitioned quickly onto social media and became better at it because of those experiences. So nothing ever goes to waste. That's the biggest lesson I would say.
Oh, wow. I love that.
Mm.
That is incredible. It's crazy that we have so much in common. I was the same because I kind of started social media before I joined consulting.
Mm.
And then when they found out, they were like, we really need someone to be on camera because whenever we force someone else to do it, they are so robotic. They're not used to it. So come, we'll give you all the help you need. And I started learning about the tech with them when I was doing this. And when I left, I had all of the skill that I basically learned for free.
Wow. You see?
And yeah.
That's another thing. Like, never take what you're learning or your experience for granted.
Yeah.
Always say that if this is what I have to do, they're making me do it, let me do the best I can out of it. You're anyway going to have to do it. I couldn't fight it. They forced me to do it.
Yeah.
So I could either huff and puff and like do it half-assed or I could take the best I could possibly take out of it. And I only say this because now I know how important that is.
Yes.
I probably could have focused much more on my Arabic lessons than I did, because now my Arabic is still not great.
Mm.
If I took advantage of them paying for the lessons and went back to back and, you know, kept practicing it, then I would have been able to use it even better now. You know, now I shy away from talking in Arabic because I don't feel I'm up to par.
Mm.
And that goes along with a lot of things, you know, showing up to meetings. A lot of people don't come, they don't go early to the office.
Yes.
But if you have that structure, then waking up at 5 a.m. when it means something, you know, now with the 5 a.m. club or the 6 a.m. club, you'll be able to do it because you're not slacking off before, you know?
No, absolutely. And something else you mentioned is that it taught you structure and gave you confidence with presentation and stuff. Same thing with me. Recently, somebody was trying to explain something and it was chaotic. And I was like, look, listen, let's put this into three buckets. And then I thought, oh, this is the consultant coming out.
100%.
And I didn't realize that my thoughts are organized because I've been groomed to, I was forced to think in that way. And Absolutely. Now it's helpful in every aspect of
Absolutely.
Life.
Absolutely. Nothing's a wasted time or Never. Nothing's wasted effort. I totally agree.
But one thing I want to ask you now is, you know, you talked about how you're not fazed by having to talk to anybody or present your work or pitch or anything. Where does that confidence come from you? You said you built it up over time, mm-hmm. but practically, how can someone else do that?
Look, I wouldn't say I always had this confidence to pitch, let's say, if we're using... I think I've more or less been confident. You only realize that... Actually, I wasn't that confident later in life, yeah. right? But especially when you're younger, in your 20s, like, confidence means something totally different.
Oh,
you know,
yes.
confidence seems like you need to be loud and cocky and opinionated.
You need to be cool, yeah.
That's
yeah.
not confidence at all. You know, the quietest yeah. person in the room can be confident.
Yeah, exactly.
But I would say if you want to be confident at, let's say, in pitching and presentations, you need to know your shit, if I can say that word. You need
yes.
to know what you're doing. Because if you're in a role that doesn't fit you, I'll give you me as an example. Sometimes I would be working on a bond or working on a big government trade that I knew was much bigger than what I could understand. But a lot of the time I would find myself almost memorizing what's going on. And when I get to the pitch, I'm pitching what I studied, but if anybody asks me something a little bit more, I'd lose confidence.
You're nervous, yeah.
You get nervous. Mm. And this maybe happens to a lot of people. But right now, because I care about the stuff I'm working on, even though it was brand new to me, all of my friends were on social media before me. I was a private account before. Mm-hmm. I didn't know anything about digital marketing, how to sell online, fitness, wellness. I mean, all of this is brand new to me. Don't forget, I joined the world when I was 31 years old.
Mm.
And at the very beginning, I had to ask hundreds of questions. Like, if a client answers this way, what do I say? How do I price? What do I do?
Yeah. But it's all alien, right?
But you care enough to ask the questions.
Mm.
So it goes back to the point of you have to care enough, because if you care enough about what you're doing, you care enough to ask the questions over and over again. And then to do over and above the research that you need to do in order to know so much. So now, because I know my stuff so well, ask me anything. Talk to me about anything. I'm very happy to answer you. And I have no sense of like insecurity.
Mm-hmm.
Insecurity comes with being unsure or not being an expert at what you do. And not being an expert comes with not caring.
Mm, you're right. Even the way you absorb information when you care about something is so different, right?
100%. Oh my God. Like literally what you just said is what I live by. Even like I used to hate studying in school. Because the way I had to study for what I had to study was not interesting to me, you know? And the way, I mean, forcing the information down your throat, like I had my mom over my head, like yelling at me if I didn't get the answer. And I'm just like panicking, you know?
Yeah.
And now all I do is read about things that are complex and difficult, even things that I might have found so boring before.
Yeah.
Now I love, because it's how I perceive it.
Mm.
You know, it's, you always need to think of giving the person what they want, you know, not what they need. Mm. I want to get better at financial literacy now. It matters to me. So I'm going to read everything I need to read about it. But when I was 25 and you're going to teach me calculus, or 25, 20, I don't care. Or I just don't. And because you're telling me what I need, but I don't want it right now.
No.
Learning because you want to and because the outcome or the byproduct is going to be useful to you, and you know it is, it becomes so much more interesting to you. You become much more curious.
I totally agree. You know, for me, it became apparent because one time I was working on a client's project and we had to figure out how to register them as a company in Dubai. And it was the first time I fell asleep at my desk. And I say first time because there were many times after that. But then I had to do it myself, right, to register. And now I knew everything about it. Anybody who needs help with registering a business in Dubai, come to me. I knew everything.
You see?
Why?
Because it matters to you.
Then it mattered to me. And I don't want to be fooled. I don't want, you know, to do any mistakes. So then you do your work properly.
Absolutely. I mean, talk about back in finance, when I had to work on like the books, accounting of specific clients, the assets and the liability, and I just don't care, you know? Yeah. But then when I was working on a startup with my husband, all we did was crunching numbers and going through every single detail because it's my startup. Yes. I care. I want to be able to know about this. I'm not going to hand it to somebody else without understanding it. Mm-mm. So it matters. Context matters. Giving you information that you want matters.
Yeah. And you know, you said that you basically discovered this whole new life at 31. Mm. And I watched your reel, which I love, by the way, and you said it's not too late, you know, and you put all these milestones that you had after 30. And I wanted to ask you about this. Have you faced this? Because I just turned 30 and a lot of people are kind of like putting this pressure on me that, oh my God, you're in your 30s now, you are not married. And, you know, I just changed career recently and, you know, not having stability and you're still in your 30s or you're already in your 30s. How did you deal with that? Because I know you put that reel out because it's, you probably had some lived experience there as well.
Yeah. Again, it's always easier to look at things in hindsight. Mm-hmm. So I can look at it in hindsight now. Maybe at your age, when I was 30, 31, I was probably also thinking, oh, I don't know, and it's new and it's different. I'm starting over. And I was going through the same emotions. But that's why it's always nice to watch or have people that you inspire to follow their footsteps. Or I mean, I've looked at several people around me that have made it at 42, have changed at 45, have started training at 40 or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay, so these are the people that inspire me. I'm not going to look at the 25-year-old and think I can relate. I just can't, you know? She could tell me like, yeah, you know, I'm a life coach and you need to do so. I'm like, okay, you're okay. Like, you could be my child too. So I just, it's not relevant to me. No. Maybe a 12-year-old will look at the 25-year-old and it's relevant. And I know that when I'm speaking on my page, I'm not talking to necessarily the 50-year-old man in context. But I'm sometimes in context talking when it comes to fitness, showing other people that are performing at 45 who have just started training at 75, like this woman that I follow. 75, you should see her before and afters. She decided to hit the gym for the first time. Her daughter's a fitness model.
Okay.
She's a beast. I can't tell you what she looks like now. She looks, first of all, 15 years younger.
Of course.
She's smiling. She's healthy. She's happy. And that is something to aspire to be like, you know? Mm. So if I'm going to talk to the 50-year-old and tell him, look at me, I'm 35. He's like, yeah, but you're 35. So shut up. It's not you. I'm actually talking and showing examples of other people. Mm. So that's quite important, you know, to aspire to be like people who resonate with you, you know, resonate with your footsteps. So if you're in that, gray area, it is normal to feel those feelings, especially if social pressure is coming your way. But we live in a world that's this small, and social media and access to inspiration is at the click of a finger.
Yes.
It's not just what your mom's telling you or what your best friends are telling you. Watch other people. And again, your feed is so important. I mean, a lot of people, you know, complain about social media that they're always fed things that they don't want to see. It's because you're watching things that you don't want to see. You're going to continuously be fed even more things. My whole feed is people that I'm like motivational speakers, TEDx clips, animals. My whole feed is anything animal-based. And all I do is enjoy what I'm watching. Yeah. I'm being fed what I love to see, you know? So eliminate all those things that make you feel worse.
Yeah.
The 25-year-old that's telling you, oh my God, I made it. And you feel like, okay, I just started my life and I'm 30. Don't need to see that. Mm-mm. You don't need to watch that. That's not feeding into your soul, you know? Watch other people that are making you feel better about yourself that tell you, you know what, keep going. Because the truth of the matter is, it's really never too late. It's especially when you're talking about 30s and 40s. I mean, yeah, a 75-year-old will tell me about something. Yeah, but it's too late for me.
Yeah.
When you're 30s and in your 30s and 40s, and more so in this day and age, because you start building your confidence and you're grounded when you're 30s and 40s, I feel like you can create so much more in that age than in your 20s. You're a child in your 20s.
Yeah.
You're really, really young in it. I can't tell you how small I felt like in my mind if I look back at how I used to think in my 20s. Thank God I never got married then. Thank God I didn't start a business then.
Yeah.
I mean, I wasn't ready.
No.
I wasn't ready. So you have so much time. Like only now, I'm 36, I'm turning 37. I'm still realizing, okay, I can discover that I feel like by 40, I could be in a really good place. And I'm proud of that.
Mm.
Ask me when I'm 25, I'm going to tell you, at 28, I want to be married and I want to have a business and I want to do this and I want to do that. It's not how it works.
Yes.
Give yourself the time, you know?
No, I totally agree. I was the same. I was like, okay, by 28, I need to be married. I need to have my own company,
yeah,
blah, blah, blah. But it doesn't happen. And you're right. In your 20s, you're so young. You're still discovering who you are. What do you want to do with yourself?
Totally.
And the confidence is not there in your 20s.
No way. It's like fake confidence, I promise you. Oh, yeah. For sure. I mean, that's not generalized, but I would say definitely for me, it was the kind of confidence that was more like banter and cocky and like, haha.
Yeah.
It's just not real confidence.
And it's also attached to either your materials possession or your accomplishments, but not necessarily coming from within.
Absolutely.
So.
Or flexing about the wrong things to other people, you know?
It's not real. But okay, so when we're talking about the younger generation as well, so one thing that comes to mind is, so when people ask me about the podcast, what's the goal for it? And I always struggle with the word empower, because the goal is to kind of like motivate the younger generation of women and show them that there are so many unconventional paths now and women are out there doing everything and anything. But I don't want to say empower women. And what are your views on that? On just saying empowerment?
Yeah. It's tough because, you know, a lot of people hold dear to their heart a movement or a cause that it makes them feel good, you know, especially in your position. If you're coming from a place of insecurity or weakness or you feel victimized, it's easier to lean on woman empowerment and empower me and let me feel empowered. It's easy to lean on that word. And, you know, in many cases, of course, it's totally relatable, totally understandable. But what the direction I prefer to take is eliminate that word altogether. Eliminate women empowerment as a statement altogether in your mind. Not so much the fact that you don't want to see equality. Of course, everybody wants equality. Yeah. Of course, you want to be on the same table as men. And there shouldn't be a reason why men get different opportunities to women. Sure. But at the same time, if you constantly look at yourself in a comparing lens, you will always feel like you're coming from below. You know, that's how I see it. I mean, why do they tell you never compare yourself to anybody on social media and everyone's okay with it?
Yes.
Why are you always saying, yeah, compare yourself to this guy, compare yourself. But if you're not supposed to compare in this regard, then why are we comparing here?
Yeah.
You know, and again, in many ways, women don't want the roles that men are after or don't want a seat that a man has. But they kind of feel obliged to say, yeah, but we want the seat. But you never asked for the seat. You never worked for the seat. You don't want it. And there's many reasons for it. Maybe you have a very nourishing, you know, you come from a very, the basis of how you are as a woman is, generally speaking, you have the nourishing side. Mm-hmm. You have, you're a nurturer. You're a caregiver in many ways. And that should be okay.
Mm-hmm.
The girls that choose not to be, or choose to balance having a career and being a caregiver, is few and far in between. And that should be okay too.
Yeah.
We can't force women to feel like they need to be all of those things. And you're not empowered unless you're fighting for the seat and you're fighting for the position and you're fighting for the business card. But what if I don't want it? You know, this, in many ways, maybe she doesn't want it, you know? So empowerment doesn't have to come necessarily in the workforce. It comes with your being confident as a person. And I would say empowerment comes across the board for both men and women. Empowered men are men who know the value of having a strong woman in their lives, who know how to, you know, share and hear and listen and, you know, guide and protect and, you know, put their woman on a pedestal, so to say, like appreciate, you know, those are empowered men.
Mm-hmm.
Empowered men are not in the context of toxic masculinity, which a lot of people are using. That's not what we're talking about.
No.
Having empowered men is important for having empowered women. So to segregate and just to say empowerment, you know what I mean? Like, oh, no, I'm not, like, we need to empower women. But no, we need to also empower the good quality men too, you know? And those come hand in hand. So eliminate that that conversation of having it one-sided, one gender. Talk about like empowering people. you know?
Oh, yes, definitely. That was beautifully said. And I liked what you said about the fact that women sometimes might choose to have a different life, which does not necessarily match what the modern day feminism kind of support.
Yeah.
And I've seen this online as well, where women who are just sharing their life being a housewife will get hate for being, oh, you're promoting the old age vibe of women being stereotypically housewives. But it's just a question of choice, right? And that's what feminism should be about. Everybody should be allowed to do what they want to do.
Of course, without being judged. I mean, more so like you get a hate comment on social media, like, okay, why don't you go make your husband a sandwich? Okay, I will.
I will.
And if that's great. You love it too. Yeah. And that's okay. I mean, why has that become insulting?
Why is that a thing? Yeah.
Why has it become insulting? Why is it insulting to want to be a caregiver and to take care of your husband?
Yeah.
You don't have to force yourself to be tough and rigid and have masculine energy all the time. You could have a balance of both. You can be very comfortable in your femininity, but also be a strong personality. You know, I mean, that's what feminism is. That is the true meaning of feminism. And it's not how a lot of social media, I mean, it's social media and people in general with this globalization, they tweak and they you know, bend the reality of what a real movement is to and amplify it to become something that it's not.
Yes.
It happens a lot. It happens with cancel culture. It happens with this. It happens with so many things that think the Me Too movement, it starts with a noble cause and then people take advantage. We've seen this over and over again.
Yeah.
So just to be really wary about what feminism is, everybody is a everybody should be a feminist in this day and age, but the real version of what a feminist is.
No, I agree. And what you said about social media as well is true. Like, I see a lot of women get a lot of hate for using filters, for example. And then I saw this really funny reel of a woman that said, oh, yeah, you know which filter I use? Use it now. I want to see what you look like with it.
That's good.
Right? And,
yeah.
And I know you've spoken about this a lot as well, the whole thing about using filters or women doing plastic surgery or even the use of makeup. Sometimes now a lot of people will... I've been asked this question before of, oh, you are never without makeup on your camera. Is that because you don't like yourself without makeup? And I don't know why it's something that people are comfortable asking, even.
That's like, weird.
Why is that anyone's business?
You're telling me? Oh, my God.
Oh, yes, please
I get
tell
like,
me.
I get, like, micro... people, like, would look at my face like this. Why is this like that? Why... I'm just like... Did you hear what I said? In
Who
my
has
post?
The time?
Like, my conversation had nothing to do with this, but that's what they would focus on. They do that a lot.
Yeah.
I'll get into it. But the thing, my take on the filters thing is, as my personal, I've said this a few times, my personal take is that when I use it, if I use a filter over and over again, and I'm talking about the beautifying filters, of course, I start to not really think that my face is as pretty. Naturally, you're just like, wow, like that's gorgeous. And the minute you put like the X button, you realize, okay, that's not me. And then you put your filter, okay, that's gorgeous. And then you start looking at yourself in the mirror like, oh, but maybe if I kind of lift my eyes,
I could just
maybe
make this a little, yeah.
You start doing that to yourself unnecessarily. You know, you never had an issue before, but because those filters are reminding you on a day-to-day basis that you could look better, it's painful for me. So I just say, you know what, I'd rather not use filters. The maximum I would use is like, if I don't have any makeup on, I have blemishes on my face, I'll use the Paris filter to even out my face.
Everyone loves the Paris filter.
Yeah, it
right?
evens out your face, but it doesn't augment your face. You're not changing your features.
It doesn't change your features.
You know,
no.
I could put foundation on and it will work just as well, but I just am lazy sometimes. I'll just use Paris and that's fine. But some people, like the argument that I would get in return is two things. One, some people would be like, yeah, but you don't need a filter. So who are you to talk? I'm like, but that's even a bigger reason for you not to use a filter, because you're breaking your confidence even further if you feel like you don't look good without a filter. You know, that it's worse. It's actually worse. You need to learn how to love who you look like than faking it and putting on a filter to damage your soul even further. And this is by no means a judgment on why aren't you telling me? Like, you need to let me know if you're using a filter. No, you don't. You don't owe that to anybody.
No.
All I'm talking about is you within you. Why are you using a filter? How does that make you feel? Does it feel good knowing that you don't look like that every day? It's damaging to your soul. And I know that because it damages mine.
Yes.
I know the feeling. It's painful to constantly be reminded that my eyes are not as nice. My nose is not as nice. My chin is not as nice. I don't need that, you know? When people talk about like plastic surgery and fillers and Botox and stuff, like, okay, but why are we doing this and not that? And my argument again is, if you have the means and you are comfortable doing Botox and plastic surgery, the truth is, as stupid as it sounds, but it's the truth, that becomes your face. You look like that now. You're not reminded every single day that you could look better, you could look better, you could look better. There's always a line, of course, with how much you're going to do and what, like, there's no right or wrong answer of how many times are you supposed to go per year to do a filler or a Botox, or how many surgeries. Like, you're limited to 3 surgeries in your lifetime. But if you catch yourself really doing surgeries for the wrong reasons and constantly looking at your face through a microscope, it's damaging to your soul.
It is.
Of course, you know? I get this on social media quite often, and they talk about my upper lip. Okay. I'll tell you why. When I was 18 years old, I did my upper lip. I did fillers in my upper lip.
Okay.
And I did a permanent filler at the time, because there was no such thing as like this as new filler that they do now.
Yeah.
I did a permanent filler behind my mom's back, and I came back home, and she obviously lost her shit on me.
Did you think she wouldn't notice?
Yeah, I'm like, what? she couldn't do anything about it, but it was a permanent filler.
Okay.
And evidently, it's uneven. Okay, I have one side that is a little less even than the other.
You probably know, yeah.
I notice it, and even in videos, you'll notice it. But that was the one time I did it. It was the worst decision of my life, which is the reason why I never promote Botox and fillers and plastic surgery and all those things on my platform. Mm-hmm. Not to say that I don't do it or I won't be comfortable doing it, but because it's a dangerous thing to promote. Somebody may be inspired by you and want to follow your footsteps and what you said, but you may have created a risk for that person to look worse, to have damage done to her. And I'm not going to take that risk. No. I mean, a lot of medical companies would call me and say, hey, can we promote Botox or fillers? I'm like, no, I would never do that. I have a lot of young girls following me.
Yes.
And it's not socially responsible for me to push something that works probably on me but can't work on them.
Yes.
So with my upper lip, I get people constantly saying, oh my God, can you stop doing fillers on your lips every week? Can you stop doing this? And I'm just like, if they only knew.
I wish.
If they only knew that it was a one-time shot and I regret it like crazy.
You can't take it out.
You can't.
Oh.
Well, if you do take it out, it's like a whole thing.
Oh, it's apparently, like intrusive.
Intrusive. They need to cut your lip. I'm too afraid. It's my face. And if it goes wrong, then what am I going to do? Yeah. You know? So it's quite hard.
Yeah.
Maybe in the future, if they ever find a solution, great. But big reason why I don't promote these things is because it could go wrong.
Exactly.
It may not look good on you, and I don't want you to have got the advice from me, you know?
Exactly, because you never know, right, what it will look like.
You never
for
know.
Sure.
You never know, and because it's permanent, it depends. If I didn't sleep well, if I went out drinking the night before, it will puff a little bit that night or that day.
No.
So then it will go. So the next morning, if I film a video, oh my God, she keeps putting fillers
in her
lips.
She's just done it
I'm
again.
Like, oh my God, like, I don't know what to say because I never even answer. But I'm just like, whatever.
Oh,
what are you going to say?
Yeah, what are you going to say? You're not going to explain to everybody.
I'm not
going
to explain to everybody. By the way, when I was 18 years old.
You don't know. But okay, when we're talking about social media hate, do you get a lot of hate?
It depends on the post.
It depends on the post.
Yeah.
Okay.
People are selective with me. So I talk about things that are controversial. I talk about things that are like the empowerment thing. People lost it when I talked about this because they're like, oh, but you don't support women. I never said that.
That's not what I said.
That's not what I said. Yeah. But you're not going to explain yourself every time, of course.
No.
But when I do talk about things that are a little bit controversial, I do get difference of opinion. But I don't see it as hate. I mean, people could be hateful, but I see it as difference of opinion.
Yeah.
And everybody should be allowed to share what they feel and what they think. What I would love to see, though, is the kind of world where people have such opposing opinions and they're okay to go back and forth and sharing their thoughts. I don't see that point, but what I do agree with is this, but what I don't like is that.
Yeah.
And when I see that on my page, I absolutely love it.
Same.
People going back and forth and they're like, okay, I see your point, but I actually don't agree with this and that. And then somebody would respond to her or him to say something else. It's just so nice. It's so nice to see this kind of back and forth discussion. It's a difficult, heavy conversation that may be, you know, maybe triggering for some people, but they're happy to just go back and forth as opposed to, you're an idiot, you're stupid.
I hate that. Shut up.
Okay. You know, it's just why it's nice to be able to have that. So I like to encourage it. I always tell people, look, I just talked about something difficult. Let's have an open dialogue. Mm. And people sometimes are responsive to that in a good way, you know?
Yeah. No, I totally agree. I'm the same. I will see when you see people disagreeing with each other in a very respectful manner and you feel like, oh, okay, I did create the platform for people to have this conversation. Mm. And that's great. Mm. And I feel like mostly I would say 80% of the time it is good, right? It's just very rare that you get a few random
100%.
People.
But you know, like everything, you remember the bad ones.
Oh God, yes, right? It sticks
with you.
You
can have 400 good comments and then the two bad ones that were hurtful, you're just like, but why did they say that?
Right.
It's not true. And you feel like, should I respond? My husband's like, don't say anything.
Yeah, responding is the worst thing to do.
It's the worst.
It is. I remember I put out...
respond to the ones that have good, like a very nice way of disagreeing with me. I respond to every single one to encourage that.
Yeah.
But if someone doesn't respond with, you're so ugly, let's say, I'm just like, okay, I don't know what to say to that. Like, I'd be talking about women empowerment and then you're talking about like what I look like. I don't know how to answer that.
Oh yeah, always, right? Yeah. Same, I had a nice piece of content and people were loving it. Yeah. And then there's just one comment. This person told me, oh, you're a sellout. Like you clearly are just trying to make money just because it was a paid piece of content. And it just disturbed me for so long. It just stayed with me. And they deleted the comment immediately after, but I saw it.
You know, but I'm happy to restrict on my account people who are vulgar and crass. If you don't agree with me,
go.
You're more than welcome.
Yeah.
You're vulgar, you're crass, you're insulting to myself or my family, which has happened. Like they just insult somebody in my family. I'm just like, what?
Why?
Why? Like, this is, I'm talking. I have an opinion
about
something.
Talk to me, yeah.
Yeah, you and your sister and your mom and your whatever. I'm just like, wow.
Oh, they brought in the whole family.
Whole family. So I'd easy restrict people. Happy to, like, for everybody to know, you're restricted. Like, they would re-comment from a different account. Oh, you restricted my post. Yeah.
No way.
Of course I restricted your post. That's unacceptable. You know, it's my page, it's my platform. I'm allowed to keep there I think is relevant.
For sure.
And a difference of opinion is always welcome. Mm. Anything vulgar or crass is not welcome.
Oh, God, yeah. No, but what has been the highlight for you of being on social media? Because obviously you experienced both worlds where you had a private account and then now you move to being a content creator or influencer, whatever you call it. Mm. But what has been the highlight?
I would say finding out that through private DMs of a lot of people and also public comments that I have been some source of inspiration or motivation for someone to want to do better.
Mm.
I mean, I don't think if it were for social media, aside from your immediate circle, that they would say that to me. And for a stranger to say that to me means a lot, you know? I mean, everybody can be an inspiration to anyone around them, right? And you could be an inspiration to your best friend, to your mom, to your siblings, and that's lovely, but it's very hard to be an inspiration to an absolute random. And thanks to something like social media, I get the privilege to be part of someone's journey or their growth journey.
Mm-hmm. That's beautiful.
Highlight for me, absolutely. Amongst many beautiful things that come with it, but you're being of service to somebody else in the most beautiful way possible.
Mm.
I mean, how can I not love that?
I know. That's really nice. And I think for me, what I love about social media is also the connections that you make. Mm. For example, just even me reaching out to you and us being able to have this conversation, I think it's great that you get to meet people that otherwise there was no way you would have interacted with. And then you get to learn more things about them and you meet new people and it's just ongoing.
You know, I would say like 10 years ago, I was having a drink with a friend of mine. He's in finance. I'm in finance. So we used to like meet after work and like grab a drink somewhere. And we used to say like, you know, I wish we knew better. I wish in schools we had access to all of the different options of careers that you could possibly choose from.
Mm-hmm.
But we all ended up picking these basic careers. So we actually thought, like, let's do a business plan where we pitched out the schools that we get somebody from all over, you know, one person that does an animal sanctuary, somebody else who's a violinist, you know, the kind of industry that you would never think of doing.
Yeah.
But now, thanks to social media, all you see is these crazy ass industries with people that are so creative, showcasing their industry in the most beautiful way. So imagine how lucky kids are nowadays to be able to have optionality. You know, you have the option to think outside of your traditional, you know, career paths. very easily. Mm. That's a beautiful thing social media offers right now.
Yeah. And even with a traditional pathway, you get a more realistic view of what it is now because people are vlogging their day.
So true.
And you see, because when I used to do it, then people were like, oh, I was really sad I didn't get into consulting, but I see you working for 14 hours and I'm like, I'm okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
100%.
And I think it's like
you're nice. Shadowing someone in a career.
Yeah.
Through social, you know?
Just sitting at home.
Very true.
Mm, amazing. Okay, so I guess one more thing. Wait, Marwan, how are we doing with time? 5 minutes? Okay. We're a bit over.
Oh, wow.
That went by quickly.
Right?
Okay. I guess then what I want to ask you is, what advice do you have for people or women in general who, you know, are trying to do something that is unconventional, because you've had such an unconventional pathway and you've succeeded and, you know, you're doing it so well and you carry with so much grace. What advice do you have? Because I'm sure there's a lot of hard work, a lot of pain and tears behind as well. Mm. But what kind of advice do you have for people in terms of finding their true calling and sticking to it?
It needs to be true to you. Before anything else, you know, social media can be a wonderful thing, but it can also be a dangerous thing because you watch certain people do things and then you think, okay, I want to do the same. But what if you never cared about fashion or makeup and then you're pretending to, like, you know, do a makeup vlog or a fashion vlog when it's not really your thing? So because you want to join in on the trends, right? Mm-hmm. This is a big thing. I would just say whether it's social media or whether it's a business, do the thing that is the most authentic to you, because otherwise you will never be able to sustain or succeed in it. Mm. It's just impossible. You know, your true colors will come out at some shape or form, and at some point you'll break. If you're putting on shoes that don't fit for so long, you won't be able to handle it anymore. So first and foremost, think of the most authentic thing to you. Even if you think it's stupid, even if you think it's crazy, if it's authentic to you, it will be authentic to other people. If you have a customer base at some point, they'll buy into it because it's true to you. You know, if you want to start a business if you have a business idea because it comes from a lack that you have, you know, in the industry that you wish you had, then go for it because it's authentic to you. It's a real problem that you want to solve for yourself. Mm-hmm. And that's authentic to you. But don't follow Skims because Skims did something. Yeah. You know what I mean? Skims is a good idea, so I should do it too. No, you shouldn't just do what other people are doing. Mm. Do something that's authentic to you.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only way.
That's great advice, Tracy. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
I had a great time.
Me
hope
too.
You had fun.
I'm like, really? Time's up?
Well, you'll find...